I was doing this heavy rock circus in Germany called Circus Flick Flack.
Yeah.
And I was doing the full on fire version for them, where I'm waving my fire clubs like I, yeah, I'm just waving them about a little bit randomly, and I touch the table that's just behind me, and the whole table catches fire in a big way. That's one of the jokes that I do if I'm allowed to.
Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah, so what happens was, we had the guy backstage and always prepared with the fire extinguisher, and while I'm pretending I don't know the table's on fire, he comes out, he goes round to the front of the table and fires the fire extinguisher back onto the table to put the thing out, obviously so it's away from the audience.
Mm.
So we've done the trick, and he's come out and he's set the fire extinguisher on, and it's almost put the fire out.
Yeah.
Oh. And then it didn't. Then it went out. The fire extinguisher's done. It's empty.
Oh, no.
So he looked at him and went, oh, and he's gone off. And the table's just gone woof straight up again. And then we'd had a visit from some fire guys a few days before, some of the firemen, and they'd said, well, if it doesn't go out straight away, just fold it in on itself. That'll put it out.
Yeah.
So that was their next attempt. They came in, they folded it in on itself, which created a massive blaze on top of this table. Literally like 5-6 foot flames coming off it. And then the top of the table started to burn, the actual wood. And then what happened is, this guy came out, he's my saviour, he's going to save the day. And he's got another fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
And it's a powder one. It's not a CO2 like the previous one. It's powder.
Yeah.
And instead of going to the front of the table and firing back, away from me, away from the audience, away from the stage, he's come from the back and fired forward.
Oh.
And he's given it the entire fire extinguisher.
Oh, no.
So basically what you got was this massive cloud of fog. First off, he fell at the table, put that out, and then I disappeared, the audience disappeared, and the whole, it was a big, big stage. You imagine what a circus ring is like. It covered the whole ring, and I disappeared, and then it covered probably the first four rows back. And you know in those Tom and Jerry cartoons where they've been covered in flour and they just blink the eyes?
Yeah.
That's what the audience was like. All my props were covered in powder.
Oh my God.
Because my hands were covered in powder, I was all covered in white, props were covered in white.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But my favourite thing about it was he come to save me. He was going to sort it. Oh. And in a way, he did, I guess.
Oh, that's a good one. What a good story.
Brilliant. All right, let's take a break for a few words from our sponsors. Hello, I am Big Ben, and I am the sponsor. If, like me, you are fascinated by all the performers, all the influences, all the tips and all the resources and props mentioned in this podcast, and you want to learn more, then go to www.thebigbenshow.com/podcasts. There you will find detailed show notes for every single episode, as well as the occasional photo and video. So check it out and get re-inspired about your shows. Alrighty, let's get back to this week's discussion.
Oh, you had a chance to work in the Sugar Babies, is that right?
I did indeed, yeah. I was in the West End in Sugar Babies, the West End show with Mickey Rooney and Ann Miller.
Wow, okay, again, for people who don't know what this is, they call it vaudeville or burlesque or something like that? Music hall?
It was just the West End show. Basically, it was a vehicle for two older stars, and it was someone who'd gone through the sort of vaudeville days and picked a bunch of routines and dance acts that they liked and put it all together in a show around two older stars from those days, really.
Yeah.
And the two stars at the time were Mickey Rooney and Ann Miller.
And you took over from Michael Davies, is that right?
I did indeed, yes. Who is a huge influence on probably every comedy juggler out there.
Yeah.
After he started. He was the guy that came round and did the Paul Danielses and all those shows at the time.
Wow.
He'd done Sugar Babies, I think, for 2 years. And he was the guy that they wanted to do it, to be honest. but equity rules meant they had to bring him in. I think they brought him in for the opening.
Right.
2 weeks, I think. And then I was brought in for the rest of the show for equity reasons. They couldn't have another American performer. They had to use some English folk, for which I'm ever grateful.
Wow, lucky breaks, yeah. So for people listening overseas, equity is something they have in the UK. If you're performing on stage, it's kind of, you have to be a member of Equity. Is that right?
Yes, it's the Actors Performers Union.
Yeah, it's the union for actors. Yeah, so this guy's from America, so he hasn't really got a permit to perform, so you have to have someone from Equity.
Yeah, I mean, I was also on the reverse of that. When I used to work a lot with Hale and Pace, who were, you know, huge stars and
yes.
Lovely people. And when they went to work Australia, they wanted me to come and work with them. And I couldn't, unfortunately. I'm gutted about that because I've never visited Australia, never seen Australia. And for their equity rules, I couldn't go do it.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, it's always a problem performing, getting work in another country, especially if you're a performer. Sometimes you can fly in under the radar, but you're always under the risk of getting arrested.
Yeah, I mean, there's rules, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, I guess.
Yeah, but it worked out for you then, you got that. Did you learn anything?
Oh, it worked out massively, yeah.
Did you get any...
It wasn't an easy job to get. There were a lot of people auditioning. I did 3 auditions over a couple of weeks, I think, for it.
Oh, wow. So you're performing...
I think that was 1988, I did that.
And you're performing in the West End, in a West End theatre. Wow.
Yeah, and my mum came to see it and everything. It was, it was lovely.
Wow. Was there anything you learnt from being in a big theatre, in a big show like that? Anything you remember? Anything good? It could be bad.
I learnt it was a very cutthroat, very hard business to be in.
Right.
You know, you're looked at, literally, the words the producer said to when I got the part, they took me in to do my spot. It was, a 9-minute spot they gave me.
Mm.
And I had to do my number again. And I couldn't do my fire, which is one of the strongest bits I had at the time.
Okay.
Where I set my head on fire and juggled my fire. And I couldn't wear my hat because it didn't fit their what they wanted, which to me was the character at the time.
Oh, no.
And then I had to go on in the theatre in front of 3 people. It was the producer, the stage manager and the comedy director. And do my 9-minute spot that I was going to do for them. Just them in a 1500 seat theatre. So just me on stage and just those 3 people doing a comedy act with loads of lying. Okay.
Oh my god.
And on my first night, on my first show, bearing in mind Michael had been doing the show for 3 years,
yeah.
And 2 years, and had got his spot because he was getting big laughs. He got his spot up to, I think, 13 minutes.
Right.
And literally, as I was walking past the producer to get onto the stage, he went, "Oh, Michael gets 36 laughs, we'll be counting."
So no stress then?
No stress at all. It's harsh at the top, but it's a good place to be.
Wow. You also, this is another big thing for UK people, you got to be on the Royal Variety Show, didn't you?
I did indeed. I was, that's a biggie.
I mean, again, for the UK listeners, they'll know, but for overseas, this was a huge TV event in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, you're looking at people like the Bee Gees would be guests on it. Anyone who's anyone is there or in the audience, either in the show or in the audience. So as far as showbiz goes, it's a huge deal.
Yeah. Does that credit for being on that show, does that help in your kind of your marketing? He's been on that show.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, if you can tick West End, then you can tick... I don't think any other jugglers have done the West End, to be honest, in the UK that I can think of.
Yeah.
If you can tick West End, you can tick Royal Variety. That's about as big as it gets.
Yes. So when people say...
So, you know, it always looks good on your CV.
Exactly. Yes. How do you deal with nerves?
I've been very lucky.
How do you deal with nerves on these big events? So it's just a one-off in front of a massive crowd, maybe with live TV.
Oh, the nerves are, it's harsh, that part. I mean, when I did Saturday Night Live, I think that was my second ever TV, and it was live.
Mm.
Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie were there doing sketches. Harry Enfield was there. Ben Elton was there.
Wow.
They were all in the show doing their usual sort of business. And it was, yeah, I was still busking at Covent Garden at the time and started doing the Jonglers as well. And I literally was doing my fire act. I remember being behind the scenery, the stage scenery, thinking whatever I do now goes out straight away. That's it. If I drop everything, that's it.
Yeah.
That was tough to deal with. I think, yeah, I made one drop. But yeah. Yeah, I was lucky and I got away with it and it was all good.
How about
once you start going, it becomes a bit easier.
Right.
It's like a lot of things with nerves. I think it's best to start on something you're very, very solid with.
Yeah.
Because as the tricks go along, your confidence builds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if anyone's got problems with nerves, that's a biggie. Start easy and work up to the tougher stuff.
What about something like the Royal Variety, where you're on a stage in a theatre? How do you get your volunteers? Did you have a volunteer when you did that set?
I didn't actually do my set. I was on with Brian Connolly.
Oh, there you are.
A big name act in the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of an all-round entertainer, and I'd done a few of his TV shows, and I'd done some touring with him and Summer Season. And we used to do a double act together, and I did that with him.
Oh, okay, okay. Have you ever had problems, like, have you ever been on a TV show where you need a volunteer and they've had to provide you with a fake one?
No.
No.
But you can... Volunteer-wise, you get what you get.
Yeah.
You kind of get a sense for it, but you'll still get the wrong one occasionally. You have to bear in mind that anything can come out of these people, and anything and everything will happen at some point.
Yeah.
There's a line that I do in the show where I've got all the balance things. I want all the glasses are up on the bottle balance, and I'll say to the volunteer, "Grab my balls." And you think, you know, that's a comedy line, that's great, and we move on. But when I was doing the comedy clubs, if you get a woman up who's incredibly drunk, they will
grab your balls,
do that, and they do that, and it's not gentle at all. It's not how you'd like it to be. It comes with extreme force, and it hurts.
Oh no. And you're trying to balance stuff at the same time.
Oh yeah. And you have to bear in mind that if you bring someone up, obviously, the more years you do it, the more you have preparations for everything that happens. Someone will do something daft.
Yeah.
Right, this is how I'll deal with it next time, or you deal with it. Well, at the time, I've had them throw the glasses to me.
Oh, God.
When you tell them, you know, the joke thing, juggle, when they've got the grey full of the glasses,
they
do sometimes throw them all in the air, and they look at you like, why didn't you catch them? Didn't you have a plan? No, I thought we were joking, you know. People will and can and do everything eventually, and you need to be aware that it's going to come, and have a plan. Obviously, if they do grab your balls, there's no real plan other than taking the laugh and moving on. But people will come up to you and say, oh, funniest thing I've ever seen, and I hear you do that every night, and assume that that's your act.
Get your balls grabbed.
Yeah.
let's talk about your standard act. You start with a big start, right? You're juggling the furniture. You've got a chair, a table, and is it a vase of flowers or something?
Yes, it's a vase of flowers. Yeah.
So, wow. I guess that's a great thing to start with, because it's big. It proves you're good. You can kind of win the audience over straight away.
It's a statement. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I'm doing a gala or something like that, when I'm practicing, I'll always do that pretty much early on when I think everyone's watching.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just to make a little statement.
Yeah.
There as well. But when I started learning that trick, it took me a long, long time to get it. And then I was doing Jonglers at the time, and I thought, right, I'll storm it, and then I'll do that as an encore.
Mm.
And then... Then I kind of went off without the encore too many times and dragged the furniture around. I thought, all right, I'll sod that. I'll start with it then.
Yeah.
And it works very, very well for that. It's a big statement, but it says a lot of things. It says what I do is stuff that you won't normally see.
Yeah.
It says I'm good, I'm strong, and I've also done a big bit of character in it at the beginning as well. So it says a lot of things. I always used to start with a one-plate routine. The even one in the roughest of clubs, a plate with routine with one plate. That was always my beginning for years.
Oh, okay.
Even in the rough old clubs, I used to do that. But it was a battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd slowly win them round, whereas you go on with the furniture and bang, and everyone goes, hooray!
Yeah.
And you're off.
Also, that's a tip for anybody who's starting out and listening. If the client's watching, or there's a big boss, or there's agents or something watching, it's always good to go for your big trick early on while they're still there in the audience paying attention. Because then you might get other bookings. Then you might get other...
There I was talking about in rehearsal, but yeah.
I often do it.
Because, yeah, you've got all the sound techies and that, and they're looking, you know, are you an idiot? Should we treat you with respect or not?
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
You've probably got the bookers around at that point because they're wandering around checking the tables.
Ground plan.
And
I see.
So it's a statement there.
Oh, yeah. That makes... Sorry, I didn't quite listen clearly. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, at that point in the day, they're all there, and they're all, you know, it's like turning up and, you know, looking smart. They need to know that they've spent their money well and feel good about it and feel confident about the night.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's a good one. I love that. That's really good. How about going on to the plates? You have a plate skag where you, is it a paper plate you fling out into the crowd?
Yeah, because I do a plate routine with one plate, I always, if I haven't smashed one during the routine, I'll smash one at the end.
Right.
And then I'll go back to the back. I have a stack of about 5 china plates and the top few are paper. And I'll bring them out and I'll throw the paper ones straight at the audience. It's always a good one.
Yeah. Because they've heard the real plates clattering and smashing and they think you're just suddenly hurling a real one at them.
Yeah, and it's also breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of acts, if you're just performing to them at them, they can become too cozy, too comfortable, I think.
Yeah.
For me personally, I like to be in and around them and amongst them and at them. I don't like to let them get too comfy and get too think they know what to expect.
Yeah. It's not TV. You're there. Anything can happen. They can be in the show at a moment's notice. Things might...
It's like when I do the knife in the arm. because I'm a juggler, they think I'm going to juggle the knives.
Yeah.
So that's why it comes as such a surprise when I actually stick one of the knives in my arm. But I'll go into the audience and I'll stand on one of their tables over them or, you know, into a theatre. I'll walk 2 or 3 rows in, over people, through them, round them. Because I found the effect is just so much stronger than if you're doing it from a distance from the stage.
Yeah. Get
and
right
again,
in the crowd.
It's also, you can play with them, you can break it up, you can put in lines that make sense, that don't make sense if you do them from far, far away, about danger, about whatever.
Yes. Sometimes you do a 3-ball juggling gag with the ball kind of swinging, string attached to your groin.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from?
Well, it came originally from a book by Stumpy the Clown, I think it is.
How?
And I tried it years and years and years ago when I first started juggling. Piers Halfpenny is an old English vaudeville performer. He was my mentor and he used to give me all these sort of sheets that he faxed out or Xeroxed or whatever from all these books he had. And that was one of the things I tried and it did not work.
Oh.
I wasn't a good enough juggler to not get caught up in the thread all the time.
Right.
And I couldn't find a thread that was good enough that you couldn't see particularly well.
Mm.
And then probably about 5 years ago, I was doing a comedy club in Sheffield called Cabaret Boom Boom. And one of the performers there was doing it. And I thought I should really have another go at that because it's just a lovely bit and it's so unexpected. And so I went back to the drawing board and I tried a whole bunch of different balls and different threads and whatever until I got it right.
Yeah, it looks great.
And the 3 things together, the furniture, the swing ball and the plate throw, probably my first 2 minutes on a stage normally.
That's right.
And I've normally cracked it and won by that point. They're mine and I'm, everything else is gravy.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly strong start.
People can check it out on YouTube, on your videos or on your website, but just to give them a visual impression of what we're talking about, you're juggling with three balls, apparently just normal three-ball juggling, and then one ball can suddenly swing right between your legs and fly up because it's attached on an invisible string to, I guess, somewhere around your waist.
Mm.
Yeah, brilliant. So that's it's just bizarre.
It used to be, I think the original name for it was the kidney swing.
There you go.
The old vaudeville name for it.
Right, the kidney swing.
It was more of an old clown gag, like the long glove or the ever-extending glove.
Yeah.
One of those gags that the performers did, you know, back in the day.
So that's that's sort of your opening 2 minutes. What do you do next in your standard act?
It's a one golf club balance next.
Okay.
A little bit of banter, a few gags, and then I'll balance a golf club on my chin. I kneel down, lie down on my back, do a couple of jokes, and then I turn over into a sort of seal position with the club on my face. And then stand up again, hopefully to some applause.
Yeah. Do you still smash the fake kind of Coke can against your forehead?
I do indeed, yes.
Lovely. That's a surprise. Looks like you've got a real can. You smash it in your head.
I'm a big lover of gags, mate.
But surely some of these gags just last like a couple of seconds even, but you've got to carry it with you to the show just for those few seconds of... Or do you try and get more out of it?
Some last much longer, like the knife routine,
mm.
where essentially I do nothing other than stick a knife in my arm. It's about 6 minutes long.
Wow!
Of gags, business, playing with the people.
Yeah.
The Coke can, can't really see a way to extend that. I don't think I should really. I should be extended faster.
Okay, so that's more of a rarity, just a one-off gag. Most of the things would
the
you could play them longer.
Yeah, the swing ball is very quick as well. It's literally just a minute, really.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well.
Where else can you go with it?
Yeah, that's
Once
true.
Once you've done swing between the legs, you've done a side swing, and
that's
then
the
you've
joke.
Done all the way round swing, that's kind of it.
That is the
Everyone
joke.
Everyone knows what's going to happen, and you need to move on.
So,
but for me, it works massively in the fact that, again, it's not what you expected to see.
Mm, yeah.
You have a certain idea of juggling and what juggling is, and when it's not. Do you know what I mean?
It just looks so silly.
Yeah, it's daft, it's silly, it's unexpected, it's all those things.
Do you have a middle part of your show? Is this all the
I
middle?
I do indeed. No, nothing. We'll go and have a cup of tea. Yeah, of course. What's the middle part? I do... 3 or 4 balls, I don't do 5 anymore really in the show. I do mouth stick bottle balloon. What else is there now? I do an ear balance, tray spin juggle. What else is there? The knife in the arm thing, 3 golf club balance, rip away.
God, you do a lot of stuff. This all fits that you can all carry this.
There's no breaks at all.
That's a lot of...
Fire juggling, bowling balls, 1 to 4 ping pong balls, peacock feather.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You do the bowling ball stuff where you've got, it looks apparently, these heavy bowling balls that you can smash together and one of them lands on your head with a crack, but it's only a bouncy one, yeah?
Yep.
Oh, mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great piece of clowning, that. Lovely gag. Balloon swallow I do.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's a hanging glass.
The balloon swallow is a running bit of factual information on my podcast. I always ask the various people what ways they do it. You don't have to reveal it if you don't want to, but lots of people have specific ways of doing it that they like to show off about.
As in what?
Well, I mean, some people can have a real balloon, just a normal balloon. And one guy in Singapore, he actually has a real balloon, unprepared, no holes. He puts it in his mouth, and he's somehow with his teeth, he's able to nibble exactly the right size hole, and then he can swallow the balloon.
He's a very talented man.
Other guys have it so that the balloon rolls up on itself as it goes into the mouth, so it left up with a rolled up.
That's the way I do it. Yeah.
Oh, that's I think it's the best way. That's the hardest.
It's a small nub.
Yeah, a small nub.
Then tuck in your cheek and lose later.
So then it can actually disappear completely.
Yeah.
You don't
that's
know
the way I do it, yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's really good. Because otherwise, well, I mean, it doesn't matter. You can do it. Otherwise, you're going to have to do the reveal where you bring out this soggy, deflated balloon from your mouth, which is also quite fun. You can find that as well.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on your character and your style of performance.
Yeah. How about the end of your regular show? Is it the balancing and the fire juggling?
Yes, the bottle balance. Obviously, the fire act is also another piece I do where I set my head on fire and...
Okay, so that's not the ending. That's
No.
Oh.
The end is the bottle balance, fire juggle, and leg catch.
Right. But you do fire juggling before that as well, or?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So do you have problems lighting your clubs twice, or is there enough fuel
to... No, I have two sets.
Ah, there you are.
Yeah, and the final part of the bottle balance is where I juggle fire while balancing, and then... throw one up and catch it in the side of my leg and hold the pose there.
How did you learn that leg catch? That's a hard move, isn't it? I've never tried that myself.
It's a difficult one. I learnt it just as part of a three-club stuff at first for my fire routine. I can't really get excited about club juggling for myself unless it's with fire. I find it very hard to sell it. But the fire act, that was my big finish for the fire juggling.
Yeah.
Then I started juggling. Actually, Sean Gandini suggested I juggle while balancing. That never occurred to me at all.
Ah.
So I learned the juggling, and then it was like, I wonder if you can put those two together, and everyone told me I was stupid. And then I learned it, and that's been my big finish for a long time now.
Yeah.
I used to do back crosses with it as well, but that became... I was in too many small clubs and couldn't do that trick.
Right.
So I didn't practice it for 2 years. I pretty much lost back crosses.
Right.
Completely.
Let's
so the back crosses are out now, but the leg catch is there.
Yeah, lovely bit of skill to end on. I mean, that's cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's very strong, especially if you can hold that pose once you've caught it.
So the leg catch is caught in the back of your knee. Lit fire
glass. Just back of the knee. Yeah.
Amazing. I'm going to clap. Woo! How about the volunteers who pass you the fire clubs? I should just describe this. People can see it on the internet. But you've got a bottle, a tray. The tray's carrying a couple of glasses. There's another bottle balanced on top of the tray. And you're fire juggling. So the volunteer will pass you the fire torches. The unlit fire torches. But even so, do they ever grab the wrong end and get black, dirty hands?
Yeah, sometimes. more often, they'll give me the black, dirty end.
Oh, yeah.
Which means I get paraffin hands for juggling with.
Yeah.
Normally, they won't touch the dirty ends themselves, but very occasionally, yeah.
Yeah, I've had people... Oh, here's the fire clubs. They picked it up, and I go, oh no, the hands are filthy. So now I always tell them, don't pick them up by the silver handle. Don't touch the black end.
Yeah.
How do you pick your volumes?
Yeah, there's always a few jokes you can build around just to make sure that they do what you need to do without. Because you do have to look after them.
Yeah. It's no fun if the volunteer's hands are totally filthy and covered with soot, is it?
You also want your volunteers to go away feeling good about themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
yeah.
like they've been belittled or made fun of.
Yeah, yeah.
You won't laugh, but you don't want them at the expense of, unless that's specifically your character and they know what they're getting into, I guess.
Yes, yeah, I think so.
Like Butterfly Man was always horrendously cruel to his volunteers. But you knew that before you came on, and you knew kind of in his heart he didn't mean it. He was just playing.
Yeah. I think it's important, because especially if you've got more than one volunteer, if you're a performer who uses more than one volunteer, you can't be nasty to your first volunteer, because no one else is going to want to volunteer in the rest of your show.
That's the one. That's or don't work in Israel because everyone's been in the army and they know you don't volunteer for anything. It's really hard to get volunteers in Israel.
Really?
Yeah.
It's quite hard in Asia. Some of the Chinese guys really don't want to have any chance of looking silly in front of their friends.
Is that a loss of face thing?
Yes, yes, definitely. Yeah.
So how do you get around that? Just use
So what I would do is I'm really, really careful. I'll pick the guy who is the laughing the most, the big lad, the guy who's really into it, who's maybe he's So pick the leader, someone who's someone you check before you pick them. You think they're going to
pick them early, or do you pick them when you go into the audience?
It depends on the show. If I have a chance, I will, and there's something happening before me on stage, I'll go and have a look around the crowd and see who's the best, and I might pick them way in advance. But then often you get on stage and they disappear, so it's, oh, bugger.
Yeah, I tend to go into the audience with something else to do first.
Ah, yeah.
And then I have a couple of jokes that I'll do with them, and in that time, I'll have time to have a good old look around and pick the person in that area that I think will be best for me then.
Yeah, yeah, it's so important. You get the wrong volunteer, sometimes it's best to just do, don't make a big thing of it, cut that act short and get another volunteer for something else, I find, if you've really made, because occasionally you are going to make a mistake.
Yeah, you're totally right there, because they can destroy you.
Yeah, and I also find your first volunteer, I think that first volunteer has to come on stage. If the first volunteer refuses to come on stage, then the whole atmosphere changes and no one else will ever want to come on stage.
Yeah, the second one is harder still, and the third one is almost impossible, and after that, you have to start begging.
Oh, God. Has fire juggling become more restricted now? When I started in Singapore, yeah, same for me. I did it everywhere, and now I can't really do it anywhere.
Seems to me now, even with functions, it's how much the person who puts the function on wants it. Because for the hotel, if you say, can I do fire, it's much easier for them just to say no.
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it, and that's what they'll do. If the booker specifically wants the fire and they've spent enough money with the hotel, they'll go to the hotel and say, look, he's doing the fire, you sort it out. And that will happen.
Mm.
But it tends to be that way now. It's a straight no from the hotel if you ask them. And the booker requests it, then it normally tends to happen.
Right.
But then you've got to fill in all the form. All the forms have to go off the...
Yeah.
Your changed. Insurance and everything else.
Oh, it used to be so easy. I go in there and they say, oh, you're doing fire juggling, are you? Under the smoke alarm, is that all right? Yeah, I'll do it under the smoke alarm. And I did, it was fine.
Yeah. Well, I remember years ago I was doing a hotel in Mallorca or one of the islands there, and I, you know, when you go to a different country, you don't know what the fuel is.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
I'd gone into some sort of hardware store and thought, right, that'll do me, but I hadn't bothered to check it very well. So I'd gone in, and the first time I lit them with this stuff was in this hotel room.
Oh, no.
And thick, thick black smoke started coming off the clubs. And it formed this dark cloud that hung over the entire ceiling, about 2 foot down from the ceiling.
Oh, no.
And then it started raining black flecks of soot over the entire audience. And the next time I came back, they were repainting the ceiling.
Oh, God.
So after that, I was a lot more careful. So be warned, check your fuel first.
What's your favourite fuel?
Paraffin for UK, lamp oil for Europe.
Yeah, and for people overseas, kerosene. I think the same sort of thing as paraffin, is it?
Yes,
yeah.
It's exactly the same.
There you are. There you go. Any
kerosene is lamp oil, is paraffin.
There you are. Yeah, there you are. How about, do you have to shake your clubs to make sure there's no drips before you go on stage?
Always flick them.
Yeah.
Always flick them.
Yeah.
If you can't, the other thing that will work is get a towel that you're never going to use again and give each club a quick squeeze with the towel.
Oh, that would work, yeah. Because sometimes there's nowhere to flick them.
That's the same thing as flicking. It takes the excess off, so no bits fly.
Excellent. I love these specific tips. I really do. I think that's brilliant. let's see. Any good stories or bad stories about fire? I had an assistant who took the fire clubs off stage. Lovely. But when I went off stage and went backstage, I found it was all on fire.
Lord.
Set fire to the backstage of a convention centre.
Yeah, well.
That wasn't good.
I've set my hair on fire a couple of times.
Oh, I've done that, yeah.
The hat that I wear for the character is the one I set fire to as part of the act. It's made to look like an accident.
That's right. It looks like you're unaware your hat's on fire and all the audience can see it.
Yeah, that's the whole deal.
Yeah, lovely.
I don't understand why people will just set fire to their hats and walk around with them burning. But when I first thought of it, we'd made the hat and I make my own hats. So I'd hung one out to dry after I fireproofed it. And it made a little sort of air pocket inside the hat.
Oh.
So when I set it on fire, I was on stage with some famous singer, I can't remember his name now, but I took the hat off, which is burning 2-foot-high flames off the top of it, and my hair went up as well, which is apparently quite funny if you're in the audience.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But, you know, burning hair, there's only so much that can burn for a start, and you can normally put yourself out quite quickly.
Yeah, because I set fire to my hair.
You just have to comb those little curly burnt bits out.
Yeah, I burned my hair.
That's only probably 2 or 3 times ever.
Yeah. Were you aware your hair was on fire? Because I didn't even know. It was the only audience who told me. I didn't even know my hair was on fire.
I heard it, actually. You can hear it a little bit and you can smell it. You don't realise initially it takes a little time for the smell to move down to where you are, I guess.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Look, you've been doing this for decades. How do you deal with doing some of the same act, some of the same lines, year after year? How do you keep it fresh?
There's a couple of things. You have to watch out for what I'd call act drift, where you essentially become bored with what you're doing, and you put stuff in that amuses you, but actually detracts from the routine that you're doing.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
And you have to recognise that, and you have to pare it back to what made it good in the first place.
Yeah.
And quite often it's people close to you that will point that out.
Right.
You can watch for it yourself, but it's normally, you know, a family member or a friend that will go, actually, that's not as funny as it used to be. What's wrong?
Yeah.
And it's also trying to make sure there's something coming along all the time, even though essentially all the main bits are there.
Yeah.
And have been for a long time. You need something else on the boil that you're excited about that you can put in, even if it's just a one-liner.
Yeah, yes,
or
you do.
A new three-ball move or something that you can be excited about.
Yeah, yeah.
That's coming along that will go in the show.
Something new. It's a little bit, at least a little bit is new.
It's all layers, isn't it? A good show, I think, would be layers where you start with your basic trick and you put a layer of stuff on that and then you get another bit until it's this really strong routine. But there's always other bits that can come in.
That's interesting what you said, though, about putting something in that's amusing yourself, but it actually isn't helping the show, isn't that great for the audience. That's I'd never really thought of that before. That's a good point.
It's if you've been doing a routine for a while, it tends to happen, and you need to recognise it and pare it back.
Yeah, it's kind of like doing
another look and realise what I'm saying is, what is it I'm saying that's working?
Yeah.
And what is it I'm saying that's not now? And take out the knots and just keep the killer lines.
It's like
if you've got a line that you think's killing, it might actually not be. It's my wife pointed this out to me that I was doing a line, it was a little bit rude, but I was pointing and going, look, everyone's laughing. She went, no. They're not all laughing. You're actually offending quite a few people there.
Oh.
What's happening is the kind of person that would laugh at a joke like that laughs loudly.
Oh.
And the laughter you're hearing isn't everyone. It's a couple of people.
Can you remember what the joke was?
No, but...
That's fascinating.
I can't remember, but it was probably an innuendo gag of some description.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can have laughter, but it might be... You might not be going as well as you think.
Yeah. The only other tip I use is when I'm doing my lines that I've said for 25 years, sometimes I just put a few more ums and ers as I'm saying it, so that it kind of sounds... It works in two ways. First of all, to the audience, it does sound as if I'm more thinking on my feet. And also, literally, it does stop me going on autopilot. It stops me going diddly 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 duh. If I go duh 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 duh, it stops me going on autopilot, and that I think that helps it
you're
seem fresh.
The rhythm, aren't you?
Yeah, it makes it seem fresh for me and for the audience, so that works. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the best advice I ever got was from a guy called Pierre Hollins, who was doing clown workshops in Covent Garden when I first got there. It was basically he'd seen a clown in the circus that was juggling. I think it was a couple of things and a great big cabbage. And his finale was to catch the cabbage in his mouth or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And he actually did it the night Pierre was watching. And he said he was so happy, so excited about it, that it just caught fire with the audience.
Yeah.
And the advice from him was, look, you remember how you felt when you first cracked that trick, how good it felt, how pleased you were.
Yeah.
If you can convey that to the audience when you're performing, you won't go far wrong.
Yes. So, yeah, if I'm climbing on my giraffe unicycle for the 5,000th time and make it feel like it's the first time I've actually managed it, try and remember the glee.
Yeah, if you can remember back to when it happened and fake it for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, yeah.
But you, in a way, you're not faking it, are you? Because it's an incredibly cool thing still.
Yeah. Some of your lines are so good, some of your one-liners. Have you ever found other... Oh, they are, they're great. Have you ever found upper acts copying them, using them?
Yes.
Yeah, oh dear.
But then I've also borrowed lines. I won't borrow a line if I think it's someone specifically, but if it's a standard line, I'll use it.
Yeah.
But in a way, it's flattering because something you've written is good enough for people to want to nick. And I guess if you're going to take out the pot, then you should be happy about putting some back in.
Yeah. I think there's...
complain. If you're happy to take from the group pool of jokes that other people use, then you shouldn't be that concerned if you put a few back in. You owe, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The only problem is if someone comes up and goes, you're stealing my line, and you know you wrote it.
Yeah, I'm the guy who wrote that line. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be nice to get a bit of recognition, but no. that's my opinion on it anyway, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, has it changed over the years? Because, I mean, when you began, there was nothing on YouTube. But now, of course, you do an act or something, and you can see it on YouTube, and you go, oh, that's the same as that guy, or this is the same as that guy. Whereas years and years ago, no one would know if things were the same.
I think probably...
I'll tell you something for me.
Well, the thing is, more people can see, you can literally put together an act by just watching a bunch of video things. I think it's much easier to take now.
Yeah.
Because you've only got to just look at a whole bunch of good acts and go, right, I'll have this bit, and I've got an act.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it would take you forever to track down the accents.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be, you used to put a lot of, you'd have to wait in the middle of the night with your button on the record of your VCR,
VHS
tape to try and record the juggling act on Paul Daniels or on Saturday Night Live or something. And then you'd have to look at it and see what's going on there and try and get the video to pause and see what he's doing. Yeah, there used to be a lot of, it used to be really hard to learn from things you've seen on TV, but now, it's too easy.
it's much easier. But the other thing is, I think it can be very discouraging because you've got a lot of what I'd call YouTube warriors who film themselves juggling, trying a particular trick 100 times, get one good one, and put that out as this is me doing this trick, and it's easy to assume that they can just go and do that trick, whereas in fact they can't.
I think that's very hard for jugglers.
You're looking at what people actually can do. You're looking at what, you know, random chance would almost give.
Yeah, it's...
It must be difficult when you're starting. Maybe you think, well, everything's been done. Where can I go? What can I do? What can make me different?
I always think there's such a big difference between seeing something on a screen and seeing it live, and I also think, as far as originality goes, it depends on the market you're in. if you're there and there's a competitor who's been already doing that act or that line, no, you can't do that. But for me, when I began, I was in Singapore, and I was the only person in the country with a unicycle. So of course I was the only person in the country with a unicycle. So of course I was going to do the standard climb on the unicycle, juggle three fire clubs, and I wasn't stepping on anybody's toes because nobody else in that market.
You were the man. You were the only one there.
Exactly. Yeah. But of course, if someone else was doing that in the same country, then you might try and do something more original. But it's the way it goes.
Yeah, I think if you're going to do that, you need to put your own spin on it.
Yeah.
You need to put your own character into it and your own personality and see where that takes you with that routine.
Yeah. Oh, talking about different countries, how many languages can you do your show in?
Fluently, I can work Spanish, French, German and English. And then probably about 25 minutes in Japanese. And then little bits of loads of languages.
Wow.
Just enough to sort of say, hey, how you doing? How's it going? And run away again before they want to chat.
That's amazing.
So if I'm working on a cruise ship or something and there's people from everywhere.
Yeah.
Very handy. Find out where they're from. Make them feel good about themselves and move on.
God, that's pretty amazing that there's quite a few languages you can do it the whole show. And even in Japanese, you can do 25 minutes. That's incredible.
Full 50 minutes in all those languages.
Well, you're a bit of a genius, Steve. Have you got a talent for
that? You've got to travel and act like mine. You've got to keep going.
God. Have you ever had audiences... Have you ever found yourself in a place where they didn't speak any of the languages that you know or can bluff your way in?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did a cruise ship, MSC. I did a cruise ship for MSC.
Yeah.
And they had people from everywhere in the first audience.
Right.
To the point where normally if you've got, say you work in a ship and they've got a whole bunch of Brits, but there's lots of Spanish and various other people there.
Mm,
what you do is you take one language and you'd work that mainly, and then you'd split off, do little asides, bits of business in Spanish. But when there's people from literally everywhere, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So the show went okay, but it really wasn't great.
Yeah.
And then the second show was great because it was just Germans and Brits. So
okay.
That was easy.
That's where
but
I am
I
lucky.
I became much, you know, as near as I ever want to come to being a silent act.
Yeah, that's where I'm lucky because I can quite easily change my show into a silent act with background music. I can quite easily do that. But it's a lot of work
for me to keep the languages going. Or
yeah.
Next one I'm doing is in Spanish, so I've got to go back to the book and do a little bit of learning.
It's pretty impressive.
Sure it's fresh in my mind, yeah.
Wow, it's very impressive. Do you need an assistant for your shows?
No.
No, fantastic.
As in, the stage assistant.
Yeah, to get your props on and off stage, maybe, or musical cues or light cues.
It's nice if you can, but no.
No, okay. For a long time...
But my show's specifically designed that it needs almost no cues whatsoever.
Yeah, me too. Love it. It's the best way to go.
I've seen far too many great acts be destroyed by sound people getting the cues wrong.
Yeah.
Or like cues wrong.
Yeah.
The more simple you... It looks great, but only if it's right.
Yeah.
So the more simple you beat your act, the better you'll be, I think.
For a long time, you had no website. So... What's the best way for you to market yourself? What was the best way for years and years? Word of mouth. Do a good show.
Word of mouth and people who saw me.
Yeah, do a good show, get more referrals, word of mouth, yeah.
Yeah. For instance, there's a guy out in Germany who first saw me on a TV programme, talked to me. I've done, I think, 4 seasons for him and a bunch of galas. And I'll work with him more. It's if you do a good job, and, you know, you're not an idiot, you don't create problems.
Yeah.
Then you'll get more work. The people that booked me for circus in Germany are the same people who've booked me for the last 12 years.
There you go. That's what I say, turn up on time. Or, no, don't turn up on time, turn up early.
Turn up early, yeah.
Yeah, turn up early. Do a good job.
Do a good job, don't be a problem.
Yeah, don't be a prima donna. Yeah, get it done well. Yeah, and then you'll get more work.
I mean... I didn't even know about YouTube. It's funny, I'm not a tech person.
No.
Now I like my wife, iPhone and all that, and Facebook, but I was quite late to YouTube, and I was quite horrified at first to find out there are all these clips out there of me acting. I said, what the hell's that? And then I realised, actually, it's a really good thing.
Yeah.
Because agents need to go to somewhere to look at your stuff, but they need to do it where there's no number and there's no contact details.
Yes. Yes.
Because otherwise, if I talk to an agent and I'm looking to book a certain act,
yeah,
and the agent gives me a price, I then go off and I find the website now for that guy. I get onto him and I ask him how much he'll do it for.
Yeah.
But if an agent can put you onto a site where you can just see it, oh, I like him, I'll have him, that's great, that's perfect for the agent.
Yeah.
Websites, I was never really sure, should I have one, should I not have one? And I think, to be honest, because I had lots of work, I didn't really need it.
No, no.
But eventually you kind of have to be drag kicking and screaming.
Into the 21st century.
Into the 21st century. And I really like the fact that I've got one. And yeah, it's nice. But I was very late into the game for that.
Yeah. So you get a lot of work through word of mouth, doing a good show, getting more bookings. You've had the high publicity gigs on TV. That's great for your marketing. I guess in Europe, there are agents. Where I am, the countries like Hong Kong and Singapore, it's too small to have an agent, really. So you kind of get hired by the event company.
Agent, do you mean manager?
A manager, yeah, a manager.
Yeah.
Do you have managers who get you work? Do you have one manager? Do you have many managers?
I did have managers. But basically, if you're a special act, if you're a juggler, you don't need a manager, you need agents.
Yeah.
Lots of.
Yeah.
Because a manager will only ever find you work. What a manager's job is to find you a career.
Mm.
But give a juggler to a manager, they'll only ever get you gigs. And that's not what a manager's for. They're to build you a career.
Yeah.
So essentially, and the other thing is, they're probably managing a whole bunch of other people. They're going to make more money off them than they ever are off you if they, you know, build a good career for somebody.
Yeah.
So there's, the bottom line, I think, is no one's going to be hungrier than you are for work.
Mm.
So you should be the one that gets out and pushes and get in contact with all the agents you can. Each agent has their own little sphere of work that they deal with, and that's how I do my stuff now.
Mm.
I have an agent for cruise ships. I have an agent for Europe. I have various different agents in different places.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the market you're in. I see.
Mm.
Yeah. How about your costume? It's quite simple. Trousers, shirt, sometimes a waistcoat. Do you have any special requirements for your costume?
My trousers are a big one, actually. I need grip on the trousers for the leg catch.
There you are.
It's a bane of my life, getting trousers that are... And I can't bring myself to take the trick out, so...
So you've got to get trousers which have enough friction, especially behind the knee.
Yeah, they can't be, like, sort of suit slippery.
Ah.
It needs to be more sort of corduroy jeany type material.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Otherwise, I'll get the grip, I'll grab the club with my leg, and it'll just pop out again.
Corduroy trousers for leg catches.
Well, not so much corduroy, denim.
Denim,
Yeah, maybe even cordia. You can't, it's like shoes for kick-ups. Certain shoes aren't so good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I don't really do kick-ups anymore because of my knees, but it's not particularly knee-friendly kick-ups.
I always wear slip-on shoes without laces because one of my acts, because I was the only person who did it in Singapore, was climbing... No, I'm the only person who does it in Hong Kong, is climbing inside the giant balloon. So I always wear...
lovely.
So I always wear shoes that I can just take on and off very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, you should always practice in your costume once or twice.
Yeah.
To make sure that you actually can do everything you need.
Yeah. You ever been in the wrong? You ever been put in the wrong costume for some particular show where they insist you wear this thing and it doesn't work?
No, I've been lucky in that actually.
Good.
But I'll tell you a quick story if you like.
Yeah.
I was working a TV show called Talking Telephone Numbers.
Yeah.
And they got a couple of archers on, and one was hitting a matchstick with a crossbow from a distance,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was shooting an apple off someone's head.
Mm.
But it then turned out that person moved and the apple was held up on the target, but all day long they were hitting it every single shot. And then they hadn't told them that they were going to dress them up in Robin Hood outfits.
Oh.
So they had the big flappy sleeves, the big hats.
Oh, no.
And they just weren't happy with it. It was distracting. It was annoying them.
Yeah.
And the crowd was in now, but they hadn't practiced in front of the crowd. They hadn't worked in these outfits. And basically, they were just missing, and people were laughing and pointing, and that made them worse, and that made them start to say the problems they felt they had with their costumes.
Oh.
And it all went horribly pear-shaped for them.
Oh, yeah, problems.
To the point where I think no one was talking to them, apart from me, in the green room afterwards.
Give me 1 second, Steve. I did mention I have kids. I've just got to tell them to go to bed, because they're making a load of noise. Give me 1 second.
Been lovely talking to you.
I'll be back in a second, Steve. I'll be back in a second. Stay there.
Okay.
Stay there. Sorry, Steve, I'm back here.
No worries.
No, it's good.
I'll have to go with myself shortly anyway. Yeah.
Okay, we'll wrap this up then. I should say goodnight to my kids, really. Oh, here's a good one. Oh, this is perfect. This is perfect timing. You have a hat juggling routine with your son, Jay Rawlings.
I do indeed, yes.
So how did your son get involved, and how's being a dad affected in good ways and bad ways your career?
It's weird being a performer because, unlike normal parents, you're away a lot. But also, unlike normal parents, when you're home, you're home.
Yeah.
All your time can be theirs if you want to.
Yeah.
But, it's painful when you're away and you being buzzed by people at home. When you're away and you see other people with their kids, I think, is probably when it's hardest.
It is, yeah.
But my lad's also, as you know, a performer now, and he's actually performing in Germany at the moment.
Brilliant. Cool.
So that's really nice.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I love performing the hats with him.
How about in the future? Do you see you doing this for as long as you possibly can, or do you have other plans?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
As long as health will allow me, what could be better?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I imagine I'll cut back on the stuff that's heavier and harder on your body will be cut back at some point.
Do you ever?
But that's normally when you realise that it actually wasn't the tricks, it was you all the time. I remember when I shot myself in the hand years ago, using a blank firing pistol, blew a hole in one finger.
Oh no!
And I was out for 2 months, I think.
Yeah.
And when I had to get back to work to make some money, and I did a gala for somebody, a company function, and I did the show and I cut probably at least a good half of the juggling tricks out because I couldn't do them.
Yeah.
It was still the size of an elephant.
Yeah.
And I apologised to the booker after. She said, "What? What do you mean?" And he hadn't even realised.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's sometimes a good little wake-up call to realise that it's not really the props, it's you.
Steve, really, really, really good talking to you. Really, really good.
Absolute pleasure, sir.
Oh, so good. Really, really loved it. Brilliant.
Hope to catch up with you sometime. That'd be great.
This was Meet the Entertainers, and I am Big Ben. Each episode takes a surprisingly large number of hours to prepare, record, and edit, and check, and re-edit, and re-record, and edit again, and throw in the bin, and mend my computer and take it out of the bin and redo it from scratch and then post it again. So, if you're getting something out of this series, here are 3 things you can do. Number 1, you can financially support this podcast by going to www.thebigbenshow.com/podcasts and making a financial donation of any amount you like. Number 2, subscribe or share these podcasts, or give me a good review on iTunes. And thirdly, get in touch. I'm always looking for more people to interview. My email is ben@thebigbenshow.com. Many thanks. Talk to you again soon.